If you're just joining us this morning, we welcome you. You did not have to be here. It's a beautiful, awesome August day. Several weeks from now, school starts, fall ministry starts, everything starts collapsing, right? We think of it like that kind of. But you didn't have to be here today, and we're grateful that you are. We're in toward the end of a series on coexistence that seeks to answer the question, just as we talked about in communion. What gives Christianity, Christ followers, the right to say that Jesus Christ is the only way? What gives us the right to have that kind of arrogance in the minds of some people? What gives that kind of intolerance in the minds of others? What gives us the right to say that? You know, when we look at our culture and everything around us, what we sang earlier, in this broken generation, all is dark, it is really true today, isn't it? If you have your Bibles, I'd like for you to turn to the book of Micah. The book of Micah is found in page 899 in your pew Bible in front of you. Jonah, Micah, Nahum is a sequence in the Old Testament for those of you that, like myself, have to be refreshed of that. When we look at our culture all around us, there's a lot of things that are happening. There are a lot of things that are going on that we look at as being chaotic. I don't know if you've been paying attention. Probably most of you aren't even aware that this is a presidential year. I mean, we have the presidential elections coming up, don't we? We have where one candidate will say anything, and another candidate will email everything and then blame her staffers that let her do it. I mean, what kind of confusion do we live in our culture and our society today? Last summer, we had major Supreme Court decisions that literally ripped out the foundations of family for many who believe in the scriptural assertion of what the family truly is and marriage that reflects that. All around us is chaos. I don't realize the impact. Yesterday, my son and I went to a family day at the Detroit Lions training campus, actually at Ford Field. You got that picture up there, Christian, or did I put that up there right? It's a very important picture because my son looks a lot better than I do. There we go. And we went to family day. Oh, we're doing it on the center screen. All right, cool. We went to family day at Detroit. And here's how I realized how my life has drastically changed. As we're walking into Ford Field, my mind is thinking about all the people standing in line, all the people sitting in the field. And my mind went to the reality of, man, if somebody wanted to kill a lot of people, here's the place to do it. Do you find yourself thinking like that at times? Do you go into the Rivertown Mall and kind of think, what? Could somebody literally want to kill a number of people and would this mall be the one instead of the one in Minnesota? What would take place? Do your minds go there? Because mine does. It didn't used to. But I find myself thinking that way, that terrorism and the reality of life and death could happen at any moment, at any place. It's the reality of what's around us in our culture. We look at the threat internationally, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Israel, North Korea, Russia, China. The economic instability that the world faces and the world is pressuring the United States. You know, a lot of economists and financial gurus say that there is a potential that we could be seeing a market crash just like 2008 within the next several years. All the markets that are all-time high. What's happening around us? What's going on in this society and culture? We have Obamacare. Some people like it, some people don't like it. We have all kinds of politics. We have immigration issues. We have all kinds of struggles, and we have all kinds of vitriol either way. We have a presidential election that I believe will probably go down in American history as the most vitriolic, the most bitter, the most hateful, and the most divisive in American history. That's within several months. We live with chaos all around us. It's crazy. There's all kinds of fear. There's unmasked or masked about what could happen or what will happen. There's all kinds of that around us. According to the most recent polls, over 75% of Americans do not trust our government. That's the highest ever in polling data. What's happening? Our culture all around us, we hear doom and gloom and despair. There's racial violence. there's tension. There's brutal, anarchic attacks against the very men and women, the police officers of this country, who seek to preserve our freedoms domestically, yet are being brutally assaulted simply because of who they chose to be in life, to serve. And the reality of all of this and the struggle that gets along for us as Christians, this onslaught. If you watch the opening ceremonies of the Olympics, you got that thematic, that whole concept that as one world, we need to come together as all the nations come together. And it's an awesome spectacle. It's incredible in athletics and those kinds of things to see the world gathered in one place for athletes. Oh, and by the way, do you think there's a threat of terrorism there? Unprecedented security takes place at the Olympics, never before seen. Concerns every day. You'll hear newscasts and news reporters talk about the possibility. That's our society. That's our culture. And as Christians, this whole idea and this whole reality, what's faced with today is the exact same thing that Israel was faced with in the book of Micah. You see, because one of the things about the nation of Israel, one of the first things that they always gave up when other nations began to encroach and other nations began to possess and take them into captivity, one of the first things they gave up was a belief in a singular authoritative God. They almost always abandoned that concept and adopted either the nation that they were brought into or the nation that captured them, their religious ideals and goals. And Micah is repeating and Micah is giving to the people, God is saying, this is enough. This is enough. You see, because the reality of people who are saying, what gives you the right to say that there's only one way? Everyone has the right to choose for themselves what they believe. And you know what? I stand here and we should all agree with that statement. Everyone has the right to choose what to believe. That's for everyone. But what have we said? It's not the right to choose. It's simply what? The choice. That's all it is. The choice. Our theme verse throughout this particular time has been the book of John chapter 14. And in verse 6 where it talks about where Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one gets to the Father except through me. We talked about that and we presented that and we said that this is our theme and this is what we look at. And have you memorized it yet? If not, you need to, because that's the most critical thing. So as a church, what should our response be to all of this going around us? What should our response be? How do we relate to that? And by the way, let me say that I believe fully and fundamentally, completely in the right to vote. I believe that every single one of you who are 18 and older, you should be registered and you should exercise the freedom that you have been bought and paid for through literally millions of men and women throughout our history to give you the right to vote. You need to vote. You are responsible for your vote. I fully engage that. I fully believe that with all my heart that that is a responsibility fundamental to every American. But here's the thing. Here's the billion-dollar question. Is it going to be political reform or spiritual rebirth that affects this country the most? I would say to you, it is spiritual rebirth. That is the only hope. We are not looking at trying to recreate and reconstitute an America of 50 years ago. It will not happen. The world has come into America, is America, part of America. The melting pot of centuries ago is more reality today than any other time. We have a most unique opportunity as believers in Jesus Christ to say, here is the truth, here is the life, here is the way, and we're right here talking to you face to face in school, in work, in family, everywhere around us. So what should our response be? Let me say, for some of you possibly that are here this morning that are not Christ followers, and you came in here, maybe somebody invited you, a friend invited you, and that's awesome. And we are so grateful that you're here. And you may not understand a lot of this, and you may not know, and you may not get a lot of this, and that's okay. We want you to know that we're a bunch of imperfect people pursuing a perfect God. We do not all have it together. Trust me. And our prayer and our hope is that somehow through the family of this church, you'll find a love that generates and you'll have a desire to want to know more of that truth and maybe come to a life-altering decision for the person of Jesus Christ. But for those of us who are Christ followers here this morning and as a church, how do we deal with that? How do we take our DNA? How do we match it up with this massive question of coexistence? In the Old Testament, Micah chapter 1, verse 1. The word of the Lord that came to Micah of Moresheth during the reigns of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. The vision he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. Those are the two capitals of Judah and Israel. And there is this small book, this minor prophet, with perhaps, as we're going to see later on, and most likely next week, that the single greatest phrase of challenge to God's people that God would give. He's speaking about 700 years before the birth of Jesus Christ. Micah is also famous for Micah chapter 5, verse 2, where it talks about, out of you, O Bethlehem Ephratah, will come someone who will be the prince and someone who will lead you to peace. Referring prophetically 700 years before the birth of Jesus Christ, that out of Bethlehem, there would be a birth of a Savior. Now, the accuracy of that is amazing. And this book of Micah is not so much about the future. It's not so much about the future as it stands for the nation of Israel, because Micah is talking about the reality of their existing condition. He's holding out to them a new covenant that some year, in a 1,000-year reign of Christ, he will rule on earth, literally, and will do these things that he promises in the new covenant. In the meantime, here is the truth and the reality that you have to deal with in the current state of your affairs. And it's massive chaos for Israel. Massive chaos. There's international tension. They have their own Middle East warring nations, Egypt, Assyria, and the Philistines. Do you know the Assyrians, which the book previous, Jonah, talks about going to Nineveh? The Assyrians were considered one of the most brutal, one of the most hateful, one of the most barbaric nations in all of the ancient world. Cities, when they were besieged by the Assyrian army, cities would rather shut their walls, block off all access to water. They would rather starve to death and die in that city rather than have the Assyrians capture them because of what they would do to people alive. It's horrific. Brutalities that we read about and talk about today were nothing compared to the reality of what Israel was facing at this time. There was all kinds of chaos. There was all kinds of being struggling. Whole cities in the ancient world were being taken over by oppressors. There was massive financial crisis that was going on. Poverty was at an all-time high. People were arguing and fighting about laws that were being passed that they didn't agree with. And they were horrified and angered about religion and all kinds of religious ideas and thoughts, and total confusion and chaos reigned. And one thing is clear, it sounds real familiar, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Micah? Sounds real familiar. I mean, it's almost as if Micah took out the U.S. Today or the New York Post or Newsweek or Time, read the current articles, and then decided, I'm going to write about that. That's how literal, that's how challenging, that's how much chaos was everywhere. Now, much of the book, and rightfully so, is written that condemns Israel and the world around them of sin and the hypocrisy among the religious groups. Now, that's what a lot of the book is written about. But look at verse 5. Chapter 1, verse 5. All of this is because of Jacob's transgression, because of the sins of the house of Israel. What is Jacob's transgression? Is it not Samaria? What is Judah's high place? Is it not Jerusalem? What the prophet is talking about here is the relationship of the capital cities and the focal point of their religious convictions. the religious autocracy that should have been in place, one God, was being elevated or devalued among all the other religions. So in the capital city, where you would see that religion should be able to focus and be able to deal with those things, they were not able to come to grips with that. They were not able to deal with that. And so Micah is saying, look, here's the real issue. The real issue is that you guys simply don't understand the reality and the truth of the religious confusion that's going around you. You have given up the one God. You have given up the relationship that you have when in covenant with your Father. You've given that up. You've accepted and adopted all kinds of ideas. You have given yourself to the idea that everyone is right, everyone can get along, and we're all good with that. That's what you've done. That's what you've done. And that's where Micah is at. And that's what Micah has to do. Great confusion. Turn to chapter 2, if you will. In chapter 2, verse 6. In chapter 2, verse 6, he says, don't prophesy, their prophets say. Do not prophesy about these things. Disgrace will not overtake us. Should it be said, O house of Jacob, is the spirit of the Lord angry? Does he do such things? Do not my words do good to him whose ways are upright? Lately, my people have risen up like an enemy. You strip off the rich robe from those who pass by without a care, like men returning from battle. You drive the women of my people from their pleasant homes. You take away my blessing from their children forever. Get up, go away, for this is not your resting place, because it is defiled. It is ruined beyond all remedy. If a liar and deceiver comes and says, I will prophesy for you plenty of wine and beer, he would just be the prophet for this people. What is he talking about? He's talking about all of those outside religions and influences that are coming in and saying, do it our way. Do it our way. Here's what I say to you. Here's how I prophesy to you. And oh, by the way, let's party. Let's just have a big international party. Can we all agree that it would be much better to have a huge world birthday party than all the wars that we face in the world today? Wouldn't we all like that? That's what was happening here. That's what was going on. Let's have a party. Let's all get along. And the confusion reigned supreme, that God really was whatever they wanted or said about him, and there was massive confusion among the people. And isn't that pretty much today? On the back of your bulletin, the first part of that talks about a book that is written called America's Four Gods. The authors Paul Frazee and Christopher Bader, University of Baylor Religious Studies, they talked about the truth and the reality of what was founding. And what they did is that they talked about that they wanted to find out how people viewed a God who loves the world, God who judges the world, or God who engages the world. And so they were talking about that. If we can get that slide up there, then we can go through this. But what that was talking about is that here's America's four gods. And today, and keep in mind what we just read about in Micah. Keep in mind in that reality of what Micah is talking about. There is America's four gods. The first God is the reality that Americans believe in the authoritative God. The authoritative God is a God who's both engaged and judgmental. It's the authoritative God. 31% of the American public who surveyed and talk about believing in deity believe in an authoritative God. Most of those people are you and I. We would believe in an authoritative God, a God who's both engaged and a God who's judgmental in the sense of setting down standards and right and wrong behavior. We would agree with that. Most people who go to church would agree with that comment. The second deity, or the second God that is often talked about, is the benevolent God. Now, the benevolent God is a God who's engaged but not judgmental. Think about this God as your grandfather or grandmother. That whatever you ask for, most of you guys, whatever you ask of your grandma or grandpa, you get, usually. Because then they can give you back to the parents who are all ticked off about what you gave them. But that's the joy of being a grandparent. You've earned the right because you had to raise their parents. So a little payback is not a bad thing. So a benevolent God is a God who just gives because he's a grandfather, gives graciously. 911, God, I'm in trouble, help me out. Okay, I feel bad for you here. I'll give you what you want. That's their viewpoint. And 29% of people believe in that kind of a God. The third God is the critical God. Now, the critical God is a God who is judgmental, but disengaged. It would be what some have referred to in youth literature as the cosmic killjoy God. This is a God who's judgmental, who judges everything, but steps back and is not engaged in your life, is literally not engaged into what has to happen and what takes place. That is the critical God. And then the fourth God is the distant God. A God who is non-judgmental and disengaged. A God who kind of steps back, observes everything that's happening, but is not involved, is distant, and doesn't really care. Now, when you think about it, when you think about those four gods, it's essential for us to understand that that is our culture today. How do we address that? How do we look at that? Because you see, most people who are not involved in church, most people who are not engaged, most people who are not working and thinking about their relationship with God, most of those people believe in a benevolent, critical, and distant view of God. And it moves in that sequence. They'll start with a God who gives everything and then realizes that doesn't always happen, to a critical God that wants to judge me, to a distant God who doesn't even care. That's how most people sequence their belief of God. And this is where Micah is coming into in the nation of Israel. And this is that major point that we want to pursue. Amidst all of this chaos, amidst all of this turmoil, God holds his own supreme court. Here's your assignment for next week. Micah chapter 6, verses 1 to 8. Micah chapter 6, verses 1 to 8. Because next week, as we conclude this series on coexistence, we are going to focus on verse 8. And we're going to ask ourselves in verse 8, what is the response of a church to a culture and a world that is chaotic? How do we respond? How do we become part of what it is? And as a church, we want to engage ourselves in the reality of the truth of how we respond. Our praise team is going to come up and lead us in a closing song that really, in a sense, describes to us and gives us the reality of where we're at and what we seek to be as a church. You know, we talk about our core values and we talk about our mission, that we desire authentic relationships leading us into a genuine community that ultimately seeks to reflect who Jesus Christ is. We only can reflect Jesus Christ as we know who he is through the Word of God. And as we seek to reflect and as we seek to do that, and as a church we seek to ask ourselves, what's our role? What's our response? How do we engage? We ask you to join with us in singing this particular song, because here's the truth and the reality of Micah 6:8. I shout out your name from the rooftops. I proclaim that I am yours. I am yours. To share this love across the earth, the beauty of your holy earth. I am yours. Stand together, will you? And let's sing this together.